members of the Yarn Services, ladies and gentlemen, welcome here. We're here to launch a cricket book by Malcolm McGregor, and later you'll hear from the author herself, Kate McGregor, and if you're confused, you clearly have just walked in from the street looking for a free beer. The rest of us know what's happening. We know this is an extremely important evening for writing about cricket and for our friend Kate McGregor. Now, not everybody could be here today, and one of those was a certain diplomat in Washington, you'll never guess who this is, who wrote to Kate and said, and talking about people she's been reporting with on the last Saturday tattoo, great folks you engaged. One of the reasons you are in the box is you write better than they do. We'll read the letter that's been sent as soon as I get to office facilities. Likewise, the speech that's from Kim. Beasley, of course. Another apology says, good luck with everything today. I will be interviewing Viv, Murali and Warney, but I would prefer to be with you and David, and that's from Gideon Hay. Now, you might wonder who the David is. This David and Kate were born on precisely the same day of the same year, May 24, 1956. And they've been friends for close to, if not 50 years. This David is also Kate's boss and very, very good friend and so supportive, and that's why we have Kate with us today. Could I please introduce the Chief of the Army, Major General David Morrison.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to speak without a microphone. Is there anybody who is concerned that they may not be able to swoon at any pearls of wisdom that I throw in Kate's direction in the next 5 minutes or so? Well, that's great. To the McGregor family, to distinguished guests who are here, and to all of those who have chosen to support Kate today in being here, it's a great privilege and a real pleasure to be asked, as I was, to launch the book by my longtime friend and colleague, Kate McGregor. And now there are three areas that I'm going to cover in launching the book. I want to speak about Malcolm. I want to speak about the main reason that we're here today, an Indian summer of cricket. And finally, I want to speak about Kate. And if that seems prescriptive, ordered and sequential, well, I am a military man. I do nuance, but only with the help of a speechwriter who has been missing for quite some time. At the cricket, I'm told. I'm very much looking forward to working with her again sometime soon. I first met Mal in January of 1980. Now, for some in the audience today, that may conjure up imperfect memories of an eventful cricket season played in the wake of the Packer Revolution, when a reconstituted Australian side was beaten comprehensively in three tests by a West Indian side for the first time here in Australia, that comprised Viv Richards, Andy Roberts, Michael Holding, Colin Croft, Gordon Greenidge and Desmond Haynes. What a side. The aficionados amongst you might also recall that there were two international teams that year, and Australia went on to beat England in a three-test series that didn't have the Ashes on the line. The shared series concept was considered a poor initiative at the time. It was played out amongst a steadily growing plethora of one-day matches. And so while the book that we're here to launch today bemoans the rapidly changing face of the cricket landscape, the signs of it were there all of those years ago when two youngish infantry officers met in Brisbane for the first time as members of the 8th and 9th Battalion of the Royal Australian Regiment. I was the new boy, recently graduated from the Officer Cadet School in Portsea. Mal, an RMC graduate of at least 1 year's standing before I was there was already a complicated legend in the unit. He was and remains ferociously smart, quick-witted with a razor-sharp way that could amuse and cut at the same time, deeply knowledgeable about the Army and its history, a very keen junior officer in a military sense, and a walking time bomb socially. The stories of his capacity both for the high life and the high wire were legion, and we danced about each other for a while, sizing each other up as young men do, until we clicked and I started to see the inner Mal McGregor. Thoughtful, less certain of himself than his public persona, with much more than just a patina of what young infantry officers are never allowed to call spirituality. The relationship was strong but brief. Mal was promoted to captain, and in that contrary way that has surfaced from time to time in his life, he promptly left the army. There followed a period of many years where news of Mal, in army circles at least, was fleeting and the source of some wonderment. That he was a successful mover and shaker in the back rooms of political power brokers, that he was a hard-nosed political fixer whose views on doing what was needed to be done accorded with the philosophy of cricket expressed by Bill Allen, the Australian-born cricketer who played for Somerset County for many seasons, who maintained that you must never bowl your granny a full toss, even on her birthday. That he was on the wagon and off it, that he was a fully paid-up member of the Fourth Estate, God bless them all, that he was highly respected in academic circles both here in the UK and the US, that he was at the meat-eating end of the food chain that runs the political jungle of US politics, that he was firmly on the wagon and now in charge of the horses, and that he had, after a hiatus of almost 20 years, rejoined the army. And there he was, working for Peter Lay, the chief of the army at the time, as his speechwriter. No, he was more than that. He was at the heart of the intellectual renaissance that was occurring in army at the time, bringing not just what he knew, but who he knew, to get army's message out to the Australian public in a way it had never done before. He revitalised our Land Warfare Studies Centre, he made the Army Journal a world-class publication, and then he was a Lieutenant Colonel deployed to command soldiers in East Timor. And all that while, I was climbing the ladder in a comparatively pedestrian way until I was a Senior Major General with the government's endorsement to be the next Chief of Army, and thinking I could really do with the help that Mal had given to Peter. And so I asked him, and he told me, no thanks. I'm off to be Barry O'Farrell's speechwriter. Cheers. I took this rebuff very well. I waited for over 5 hours, and then I rang him, and I told him he was an idiot. Peter phoned me and told him he was an idiot, a person of much greater influence than both Peter and I. Reinforce that message. He phoned me back. He told me he was thinking about it. I told him to think fast and hung up. We met and I outlined what I wanted to do during my tenure as the chief. He said, I'm in. And I have been the beneficiary of his insight, his literary skill, his friendship and support ever since. Oh, he said, I want time off to write a book. What about, I asked. About cricket, he said. Okay, I said, shouldn't be too onerous, crack on. And so here we are today, 18 months after that conversation, and I am just now, for the first time, speaking about that book, 5 minutes after I began, and I'm sorry about that, but better late than never. It is an extraordinary work. Extraordinary? Some of you are thinking, I'll give it a break, it's a book about cricket. And it is, in part. Beautifully written and wonderfully produced by Ian Gordon and Borrelia Books. But consider this. It's also about growing up in Australia in the 1960s, about losing a father, gaining a reputation, about war and the way the nation has waged it since Federation and will wage it into the future. about the almost mystical influence of a 1960s Japanese TV show about samurais. Although Tombay was always a bit of a loser in my view. And if you are under the age of 54 and you don't understand my last remark, you need to pay more attention to very, very late night TV, and good luck to you. It's about India, England, the breaking of the 4 minute mile, the sometimes paradox that is the United States of America. It's a book where Raoul Dravid takes guard with the Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard, and they both make runs. Where Australian Bob Cowper shapes an inning and sets the conditions for Carl von Clausewitz to capitalise on a tiring fielding side. Where 9 pages into the first chapter, Carl Jung is called on to open the bowling into the wind, reflecting on the morning and the afternoon of life, while Ishan Sharma waits down at third man for the new ball. It's a paean to what my favourite Australian poet C.J. Dennis calls the mooch of life. It's a restated and deeply personal commitment to all that makes our army one of the nation's great institutions, peopled as it is by the finest of Australians. It is a love song to the person closest to the author's heart. Buy it. But if you don't like it, don't ask for your money back. Restocking a wardrobe is difficult at the best of times, and at the moment the bar is set high. And so to my mate Kate, and there is little more that needs to be said for both an Australian and a soldier. She is my mate. I don't care that the person I used to know is Mal looks different. I do care, and deeply, about her well-being. I value her contribution to the nation, recognised as it has been in this year's honours list. Kate McGregor, AM. I am the recipient of her passion for the army, for meaningful change to our culture, for holding to account those who would return us to strategic isolation but will never serve the nation's strategic interests. We are a team, and I could not be prouder of her grace, her dignity, and her resolve. By the book, it'll make a difference. It'll certainly make a difference because, in closing, I can assure you, she is not writing another one on my watch.
General, I'm a bit disappointed you didn't let then Malcolm go to Barry O'Farrell's office, because I would have loved to have seen how bad I would have handled the transition coming up. It would have been so much fun. Look, there's one more before you meet Kate herself. There's one more note that should be mentioned. It mentioned with great pride, because it's a great credit to Kate. It's from Raoul Dravid, who has played a bit of cricket. I read parts of the PDF and really enjoyed it. Speaking of the book, of course. Thank you for your very kind words. To write like that, with all that going on, is amazing. It takes great courage to confront what you have and to deal with it. I would just like... I would just wish you all the very best, and hope that you will be an inspiration to others who may face similar and in fact any challenging issues in their lives. Kind regards, Raoul. Ladies and gentlemen, the author, Kate McGregor.
General Morrison, Excellency the British High Commissioner, and distinguished guests, particularly Mark Vergano from Cricket ACT, Deputy Chief of the Army General Campbell, General Singleman, is here also, and family and friends. I guess I should stick to some cricket things first. Normally, when you come in at number three, you're quite happy if the opening pair have done well. In public speaking, you wish them to do very poorly so that you look okay. And I've just come in behind two David Warner just hit 180 off Vinay Kumar, and I've come in feeling like Rob Quiney in the second dig at Adelaide, knowing what that feels like. It's customary for an author to go through some mandatory thank yous, and in this case, in my case, they're heartfelt, but I need to do them immediately. I want to thank my publisher, Ian Gordon, first. Ian backed me when no one else had. I was nervous about getting this book to print and went with him, as we'd been colleagues, on the Army Journal Board, and he wanted a series of essays from me. And I went to talk to him and he backed me and he never doubted me. When, in fact, as things unravelled for me at a personal level, there was plenty to doubt. But he saw it through, and with great adversity in his own life, as we know because of the cancellation of the Adelaide launch, his wife Eula has been unwell, and Ian's had an enormous amount to deal with in addition to talk. With an author going through a gender identity crisis and a publisher with a sick wife, how did the book come to pass? Jen Seifert is the answer to that question. Both as a friend to me, as one of the first people I discussed my deep inner problems with, and as a stalwart friend and editor, Jen made this book happen. It wouldn't have happened without it, and the work is a testament to her. It's an extraordinary piece of work, and she propped the two of us up as we struggled to get it done. Peter Gamble's production work is simply superb. I think you'll all agree Indian Summer is a beautiful book. I would be immodest to talk about the contents, but it certainly looks a million bucks. And Peter, thank you. It's just staggeringly attractive. To Cricket ACT, Mark Fagano, Dougal, and the team who at short notice allowed us to use this wonderful facility today to give it the cricket theme, thank you very much. Anything that I can do with my humble pen to agitate for the Belrive test to be moved here, you've now got me on board enthusiastically. To Cricket Australia, who've also been wonderful, Alana Lakeland, Angela Logan, dear old Phil Pope, who's not here, he's an Army brat and an ex-British Army soldier from the Sherwood Foresters. And he led three cheers for me in the media box when I got my AM on Australia Day, such as his fondness for things military. Deeply touched by Cricket Australia's acceptance of me as Kate and the way they've handled the transition. The book is a love story. It's a story about a love for a person to whom it's dedicated. She's a very private person, I won't talk in detail about that. It's about the love of a game, which is cricket, and it's about the love of an institution, which is the Australian Army. When I started writing it, I didn't know how it was going to end. I quite frankly didn't see it coming. I had a burst of creativity, which I became very much aware of in August, and I started to get the urge to write cricket. We'd been watching the India-England series closely, and as I recount in the book, on one occasion I tried to do a bit of that phony generosity that husbands, as they are, as I then was on holidays at Cable, saying, really sure you're happy with this cricket being on all night on the telly? It's a rather small hotel room. To which the reply was, no, I like the hum of the crowd and the broadcasting is a right call. And I thought, for someone to say that about cricket means that there's something subliminal in the way it touches our psyche that I think is worthy of telling a story. And that spawned the idea of Indian Summer. I thought it touched something for me. I realised that a constant, intermittent, cicada-like hum that ABC radio call had represented through my life was something really special. And I wanted to try to convey that as a nostalgic look at cricket in the afternoon of life, look back over my memories of the game as it had evolved over my life. And I'm an unabashed nostalgist and traditionalist, I guess, and so the past I write about never really happened, I guess. And as I thought about the book, I had, you know, when you have those promotional thoughts, the Hollywood get those Voice of Doom guys to talk about a movie, and I thought, what's Indian Summer? And I think the Voice of Doom would kind of say, a book by a man who no longer exists, about a game that never exists, in a country that's vanished forever. And that's kind of what the book's about. I've changed, obviously. The game has changed over the time. It may not have existed in the form that I even recall, but I'm a naked nostalgist. My first memories are of Dexter's team in 62-63. I grew up through the Chapel era. Roald Narmer is a left-arm orthodox spinner and a reasonable batsman for a time, Dave remembers, in the late 70s and 80s. And I love the game deeply, and I fell in love with it again on a visit to Lourdes in 2008 and realised that I had lost something aesthetically wonderful in cricket that I wanted to rediscover, and started going to live cricket again and fell in love with the game all over again. The love of the army came very much to the fore, and the trauma that I've been through has reaffirmed it. When I got the Order of Australia earlier this year, I realised what an extended family the army was. My phone started ringing. I was in Adelaide for the test, but the home phone rang, and our first commanding officer was on the phone. A man I hadn't seen for years, ringing, having seen my name. That told me that the army was a family, but it's only when a triumph is one thing, but when it's really tough is when you realise it's a family. And this recent period, I've just been absolutely humbled at the support I've received from people too numerous to name, but the chief heads that list. I confided in him not long after my diagnosis, and his response was extraordinary. In the mood, and he talked about our early life. We were soldiers once and we were young. There's a movie named that. And in that movie, Mel Gibson talks to the 7th Cavalry before they go on operations to the Yardang Valley. And he says, people tell you you're leaving home, but you're actually going to a place that home's meant to be. And that's what the Australian Army is. It's kind of like a family. And my attendance has been patchy, the boss is right. He rang me at the Gabba and said, you need to change that thing on your tweet page from part-time cricket writer and full-time army officer to reverse the order. And I explained to him that because I was so fragile because of my gender transition, that the chief of staff had implemented a rotation policy like Cricket Australia. And I said, on every algorithm I've exceeded my word limit for the year, and I'm being bowled in very short spells. They're all brilliant, but of necessity, they're fairly brief. You've now heard what he does when he doesn't have me. And it's better than anything I've written for him this year. And in an era of defence cuts, I'm starting to think I'd better get back to work. Because I'm starting to look distinctly supernumerary when you've got someone who writes like that. Malcolm stepped into the breach, and it was wonderful of him to do that. He pinch hits for us frequently. We had it in joke that when we were looking for a minor celebrity to turn on our Christmas lights last year, we picked him after the guy who reads the weather on East Anglia television couldn't do it. This year, I'd been knocked back by Kamal and Ian Terps Terpy. Gideon Haig was otherwise engaged, and Jimmy Maxwell sent his apologies, and I rang him and I said, I know you haven't got a fragile ego, mate. You haven't seen my football. And he stepped into the breach, and with only one error, the boss is actually a Lieutenant General, but he's not known to hold grudges.
Not at all.
So, look, I've banged on enough. I just want to thank people, all of you, for coming. I've thanked a number of people in the book very formally and by name. I want to thank a few people who've travelled. My older sister, Mary, who's travelled not long ahead of having hip surgery, and it was a huge ask for her to get here. I want to thank Trisha's sister, Anne, who's come a long way today to be here. And two very old and dear family friends, Paula and Addie O'Hara, who've travelled to be with us today. Old mates Ian Courtlang and Mark Coulton have come from Sydney. Mark knew me when I was a very, very seriously alcoholic press secretary to Bob Carr in the 1980s. Court was a business partner and a current friend, and he'd booked to go to Adelaide. I'm just deeply moved that people would take the trouble to come that far to be part of this. To all of you, you've given time to come and be part of this book launch, and I'm deeply grateful. I want to say a final thank you, though, to three little kids and a rabbit. Our neighbours, it's a funny story. David's the only person born on the 24th of May I know who hasn't actually had serious gender dysphoria.
And won't.
And I kind of waiting for some telltale signs. Because it's the only causal thing that I've been able to come up with. I can't work out how this happened. I started writing a cricket book and ended up a chick. I was discussing it with Peter Lawler the other day. After I'd been doing some sprints down on the Oval, a lingerie football team had been warming up. Peter Lawler from the Australian said, "Why didn't you text me?" And I said, "Because girls don't do stuff like that about other girls." And he went, "You prick." Very funny, but he's a great fellow. There's wonderful camaraderie on the road. But our little neighbours were the people who, when I was very, very worried, this is the classic what will the neighbours think issue to have happen in your life, I can assure you, to start emerging in a different gender. And Unji, Wani and Jacob came over to visit me one Saturday morning, and I know why the Gospels talk about seeing the world through the eyes of little children after the experience I had, because those three kids looked at me and it made no difference. I'm wearing a bracelet that Unji made for me. She's become my number one pen pal. And I think the next book will be hers, not mine. She writes beautifully. And she gave me a lucky bracelet that I wear when I need to be brave. And I was nervous about tonight, and I wore it, as I promised I always would. Wani thinks I look like the lady from The Parent Trap. Just so you all know, that's Natasha Richardson. She has a huge future as a casting agent. And I'm going to buy her a megaphone for Christmas and set her loose on the street. And wonderful young Jacob is just the best young fellow. He has judged me not at all and greets me with a great smile every afternoon. They've let me befriend their little rabbit as well, and I feel very much part of the neighbourhood now. Now, and Lyndall and Phil, great to see you here as well. You must have kind of wondered about the Alfred Hitchcock scene being acted out over the road at certain points in the winter, but it's good you now know what's going on. So tonight is a night for me to thank each and every one of you for being a part of my life. There's that line of Tennyson, I'm a part of all that I've met, and that's very true of an author in particular. It's very true of an author who's led the rather circuitous life that I've led to this point. I hope you enjoy Indian Summer. I certainly hope you buy Indian Summer. And on that note, I think I've banged on way too much. And I'll hand back to OMC.
Is a Major General bigger than a Major? It's a double, isn't it? All right. Look, you have a great opportunity now not only to buy the book at a special price. That was bullshit, wasn't it? But you'll have a prize, yeah, right. And you also, the author, will be able to sign it before Lieutenant General Morrison confines her to barracks. So get in now. It's a special opportunity. Thank you all for coming.
Well done.
That's a very, very reasonable place to watch.